Well, it's certainly a pleasure having the chance to meet you after being exposed to your work and reading all the glitters. You have a rather unusual format for the book. I guess you used that first with Crowned Heads, didn't you? The short
but
novellas,
not,
I guess you call them novellas. Huh?
Novellas, yeah. Not quite as seriously as I did with this one. I kind of worked that out. The characters really only had one thing in common, which was the fact that at one point in their various careers, they had all worked together in one particular film. But I took that format and I've exploited it more in All the Glitters, to the extent that the five women and the one man are all very involved, and you find out bits and pieces of each character as the storyline evolves through the various novellas.
And yet each one could stand alone if necessary, couldn't it?
Yes, I think so. Yeah. You might miss some bits and pieces of information that I kind of feed in as you go along. But
now, I have a feeling the women are made up of bits and pieces of a variety of different actresses. But I'd like to, now if I'm wrong about this, I'm sure you're going to correct me, but I'd like to throw out people that these individual characters in the book remind me of, and you tell me how far off I am.
Okay, fine.
I'm sure I'm, I know they're composites, probably, but there are so many similarities. Now, Babe Austrian has to be Mae West.
Doesn't she? Doesn't she?
I'm right?
Yeah, you're sure. you could throw some Jean Harlow in there, but she could not be anybody else, really, could she?
No.
I tried.
That was the easiest one.
Yes. I tried to find a way for her to talk that went beyond the obvious, familiar Mae Westian kind of honky-tonk quips. But unless she dropped her G's and talked that way, you really didn't get that kind of flavor that I wanted.
Now, did little Tom Tyron back near Hartford...
Don't ask that question.
Chase after a motorcade and jump on the running board of a famous actress's car.
If you read the Hartford papers of the year 1938, I think May or June of 1938, you'd find some interesting material.
Is the paper still in print?
Yes, indeed it is. Yes, it is. The Hartford Courant is still in print.
Well, I don't know. I'm going to make a trip up to Hartford to find out, but you're not going to tell me the truth.
No,
huh?
I'm not. No, I'm not.
All right.
Let's say that each of those characters and what I have to say about them embodies amounts of truth and fiction.
All right. Belinda Carroll. This was a little harder, but I have the feeling she may have been much like Veronica Lake.
Now, that's very interesting. Veronica Lake.
Often, well, Veronica Lake had a major problem with alcoholism. And
yeah, and, that's
and,
true.
And she had a very bad end. So
did she have a bad end?
I think so. And if I have the right actress. Didn't they find her working in Providence, Rhode Island?
No, that's Betty Hutton.
Oh, Betty Hutton.
Yes.
All right.
But they did find Veronica Lake working in a department store here, behind the department store counter, long after her period of fame.
Well, I may have gotten them confused.
And she did have a nasty bout with alcohol. Mm-hmm. And I have researched her for another project, and I'm darned if I can remember how her end did come.
Well, I'm a little off on that one.
It's a natural error, because Betty Hutton and Veronica Lake were both top stars at Paramount in the early 40s.
But Betty Hutton sang, as I recall.
Yes. Veronica Lake tried. Yeah, Betty Hutton sang.
Her hair got in the front of her
mouth.
Yeah,
right,
and,
right.
Well, all right, all right. Who is the image of Belinda Carroll?
Well, when I wrote Belinda, I certainly had Lana Turner in mind. You have to go on the premise that Charlie, the narrator of the book, is a very thinly disguised version of yours truly. There's a lot of autobiographical material in there, including some of the Mae West episodes.
Mm-hmm. But the Hartford Courant wasn't that far off.
Yeah. It It says that Charlie talks about having put Belinda Carroll's initials in cement in the basement of the house that he lived in when after the plumbing went awry and there was fresh cement. He put his initials and Belinda Carroll's initial and encircle it with a heart. And if you go to a certain house in Wethersfield, Connecticut, on the Valley Hill Road and look in the cellar, I think you'll still find a piece of dried cement that says TT plus LT and has a heart around it.
April Rains, that was another kind of a hard one, but I kind of had Janet Lee as an image.
Why is that?
Starlet.
Yes.
Married to another actor.
Yeah.
I'm pretty off. Huh?
Well, yes, you are, but that's you're way off. But okay. It's interesting, and I can understand why you might come up with that, except because Janet was a starlet. She did have that fresh all-American girl look. She married a star, Tony Curtis. So that's understandable. It happens that this particular lady, whose name I would not prefer to give, was more than a starlet. She was an accredited actress at a major studio back in the 40s who did some reasonably important pictures, some top B pictures or lesser parts in A films. She happens to be in The Women, as a matter of fact. And hers is a very tragic story. And when I heard it, I suffered for her because I had a personal affinity for this lady. She was beautiful and so fresh and pert and lovely to look at and not a bad actress. But she made the mistake of falling in love with the wrong man. And
don't they all?
Well, no, they don't all. But I guess a lot of them, or some of them do. In any case, she did. And it drove her cuckoo. And she is still in this state asylum for the insane. In California, and I heard this just I heard it at a party one night, and it impressed me so. I felt that it was a good piece of material, and that I would like to treat it. I would like to treat it sympathetically, and I would like to treat it as one of those girls who achieved stardom, but she didn't really want it. So what price does one pay for that?
Maud Antrim, well, she could easily have been Mary Pickford.
Yes, she could easily have been. Actually, you know,
I also saw Lillian Gish there, although she is a...
Good, Lillian may play the part when it comes time to put it on the screen. She may just do that. Somebody else...
20 years from now, and she would still fit the role.
Yes, she would. She would. Well, of course, Maud is the doyenne of Hollywood. She's the grand dame, and she certainly is the classiest lady in this collection of ladies.
Fawn, I wasn't sure about. I couldn't really identify.
There isn't any Fawn.
Yeah, I couldn't identify.
There really isn't any Fawn, although she is the evil force through the whole book.
Claire Regret. This was a tough one, especially because her real name is Cora Sue Brodsky, but I kept seeing Joan Crawford.
Well, I think you've done right. That's who I kept seeing.
Well, then I got three out of the five.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Not too bad.
There's no really no way, unless you were a real aficionado of the inside Hollywood stuff, would you ever guess who April Rains is? And because Belinda is really such an amalgam of several women, I don't think that you would be too inclined to know that had certain references to Lana Turner.
Well, I love the way that you integrated the fictional characters with real characters. In fact, as I was reading along, you know, I came to Claire Regret, I wasn't sure at first. Maybe she was really an actress, you know, just a name that somehow escaped me. It sounds
oh, really?
Like a very familiar name, you know. It sounds like it's right, and I'm not up on my Hollywood lore, so some of these fictional characters in there could... been real people? I don't know. So, you know, actually, of course, I began to differentiate, but I like the way these were integrated because although this was a comedy, a dark comedy in many respects,
yes.
There was a a feeling that this all could have happened, and in fact has.
Well, I take that as a great compliment. Thank you.
You were an actor, and you left it. And now you're writing. Of course, everything you've written has not all been about Hollywood, but now you're writing a lot about Hollywood. Do you feel jaded with your own Hollywood past? Is this why you're doing this? Get this out of your system, or what?
No, by no means am I jaded. I still live in the heart of Hollywood, and I have for, 35 years. I also keep a home here in New York, and I do a lot of backing and forthing. But no, listen, like Charlie says to Maude in the book, she says, well, don't you like Hollywood? And he says, oh, I love Hollywood, and I love Hollywood. It's just that as an actor, I was there, and I saw, and I heard, and I kept my ears peeled, and I acquired this store of knowledge that I have. So it turned out that after stopping acting and becoming a writer and having a measure of success, I didn't write about Hollywood for over 10 years, and I wrote 3 books before I published one, and I wrote parts of 4 other books. So I wasn't in a hurry to get to Hollywood, and I'm certainly not out to dish the dirt. I'm just trying to take the things that I have heard about or seen and to reinterpret a lot of those old myths, like the Mae West myth. That's one of the great myths. And I just took it and manipulated the material and tried to show a little insight to illuminate what it seems to me a character like that might be.
Well, when you stopped being an actor and took up writing as a profession, you did something that I think ultimately became very self-satisfying for you. It has to be to see your work in the covers of boards, pages there. But it would seem to me that you have also adopted one of the hardest professions in the world. Wouldn't it have been easier to remain an actor than to become a writer?
Yes, I have no doubt. I mean, I had to go out and learn a whole new trade. But you said it. It is so ultimately satisfying, and less. It's a less harrowing way of earning one's subsistence. And I don't know if I hadn't had that wonderful success with my first book, I don't know if I would have elected to go on and keep writing novels. But I felt that it was very serendipitous that I spent 2 years doing the other, and it came out well, and I thought, well, why not do another one? And it has simply been a progression, and I think I have expanded as a writer. I've spent 10 years working on a very large work, which will be out. It's going to take another 2 years to complete. That's a historical romance. It has nothing to do with Hollywood at all. It all takes place in the 19th century, and that has been the major thing that has consumed me for the last 10 years.
And yet, when you wrote the other, it didn't come easily. It wasn't an automatic gesture becoming a writer, was it? You had some difficulty making that transition, didn't you?
Oh, sure.
Well, tell me a little bit about that experience and moving from being an actor to a writer, and how you finally broke into print.
Well, you know, it's really very hard to describe that whole process. I began on an idea that certainly was not even close to what the other became, although the characters were there. The period was there, the background of that little Connecticut town was there, but there was only one boy, and it wasn't until I invented the second boy that I found the conflict, and then I saw the possibilities, and once I saw the possibilities, I quit everything else. I just, it became my passion to see that story completed. What happened as a result of that, I never would have dared contemplate, but I did think that I had one hell of a story, and of course I did, and as long as I was aware of that, it just kept me going. because I didn't have anybody. I didn't know where to turn to get professional advice about that book. No one read it until I had done 9 drafts of it. Every one of those drafts had a different title. And finally, I said, this is crazy. Somebody's got to read it, and I put it into the hands of somebody I felt would be sympathetic toward the work, and indeed they were, and indeed they said, Tom, you're a writer, and this must be published, and he arranged that it should get published.
This was an agent?
No, it wasn't, as a matter of fact. When I was under contract to Paramount back in the 50s, there was a wonderful guy there, deceased now. His name was D.A. Duran, and he was a story editor for the film studio, and he was indeed a Duran of Doubleday Duran, the publishing house, and he knew everybody in the business. And the work was sent to Bennett Cerf at Random House, and Random House was going to publish that book until Bob Gottlieb at Knopf took it away from Random House because he wanted to publish it himself. It truly had a magical life from the moment that I came up with that second boy. And from then on, it didn't matter how hard it got, I could get through it. And then it just went bang, 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 bang.
Well, the other is a matter of publishing history, but then you had to go on to another book and another book and another book.
Well, the second,
harder or easier?
The second book was in many respects harder because I had laid down a track record that I then had to beat. I was obliged to beat. I submitted 3 other books between the other and Harvest Home. And each time, and as a matter of fact, one of them was a big Hollywood book. And Bob Gottlieb at that point said no. He didn't want me to write about Hollywood. He said that I wasn't distanced enough from that place, and that he preferred that I keep working in the vein that I had begun. And at that point, they were calling me the Master of Horror, and I said, I don't want to be Master of Horror. And I didn't. I never wanted to be typecast as an actor. I didn't want to be typecast as a writer either. So on my third book, I made a complete switch. And then on the fourth book, I made another switch. Now All That Glitters, the fifth one, is indeed a companion piece to the fourth one, but people seem to like them so much that I kind of envision doing 4 of them. There are 2 more in that series planned.
Well, you're so established now as a writer. If somebody were to call you and say, Tom, we've got the greatest part in the world for you.
Oh, yeah, I know, but they're not going to call me and say that. They're going to call me and they're going to say, hey, Tom, listen, we got this little part and, you know, why don't you come and have some fun with us? And then I would go and I wouldn't have any fun with them. And I would be distracted from my writing. If it happened your way, that would be terrific.
So you would do it if the opportunity developed, you'd go back.
Well, I'll give you an example. I was at dinner one night in a restaurant and the two producers, Aaron Spelling and his partner, came over to me and said, hey, Tom, won't you come and do this part with us on Dynasty? It's a terrific part, blah, 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 blah. It was going to be a running part. Well, I'm sure 20 years ago I would have jumped at the chance. But what would I do with a running part on Dynasty today when I spend 8 and 10 hours a day at the typewriter? I really don't have time. If they said, hey, come and spend the summer in the south of France and play Aramis and the Three Musketeers remake, I'd say, sure, okay, I'll do it. But I've carved myself a little niche, and I'm happy there. And why should I put myself in competition with the guys that I was in competition with 25 years ago? It doesn't make any sense.
It's more than a little niche, that's for sure. Do you benefit from working with an editor, or now are you so poised and polished?
No, I'm not poised or polished. I have, I think, who is the man who is generally agreed as being the best editor in the business. If not, he certainly is one of the best. I couldn't think more highly of, and we've had a wonderful 17, 18-year relationship.
Robert Gottlieb.
Name of Robert Gottlieb, yes.
He is the editor of your stuff.
Well, he is the president of Alfred A. Knopf. He is also the editor-in-chief, and there are a few lucky ones of us whom he edits. And I consider myself very fortunate. He's been the only editor I've ever had or known, and I hope he will continue to be so.
Well, you're, in some respects, writing in a tradition of writers who have put forth Hollywood in varying degrees of light. Nathaniel West comes to mind.
And yes.
S.J. Perelman satirized
Hollywood. Yes, yes. Cloud Cuckoo Land.
Yeah. So all that. Well, you have a wonderful line here toward the end that is almost poetry, and it's, you can't write intelligibly about Hollywood. It's just writing about dreams. There's not much flesh there, only fantasy. Is that really true? You can't write intelligibly about Hollywood? I've just read a almost 500-page book. It's pretty intelligent to me.
Well, I don't know. Maybe I was hedging my bets there. I simply mean, and I do maintain, that, you know, it's been said, 100, 1,000 times? It's Hollywood is a state of mind. It just, I mean, there is no Hollywood. I mean, there isn't even a physical Hollywood. It's just, it's a myth that has been created in the past 60 years, and it's celluloid dreams. And it really is very hard to write rationally about your dreams. And it's not just my dreams, it's everybody's dreams. But when I was a boy, what was my dream? My dream was to grow up and go to Hollywood and be a movie actor. That's really what I wanted to do. I wanted to do that in the sixth grade. I never thought I really would, but I know that's what I wanted to do. That's what I dreamed of doing. Well, I did it, and I got out there, and that was the day I arrived. That was the day they were pulling out the lawns and putting in the parking lots, and I don't know who died in the next week, but some big star died, and television was in, and it simply was never like what I imagined it to be. But I did see. I did go to those parties. And I did meet all those people, and I did see how terrific they were, how wonderful, how bigger, larger than life, how grand they were. And in the 35 years that I've been out there, I have seen it all just erode away. This was not one big mass exodus, but in came television, and it started eating away, and everything changed.
That's right. They're making movies in North Carolina now.
Well, that's terrific. That's okay. I have no objection to going to North Carolina to make a movie. There's no reason why that shouldn't be so. It's just that it has become such a steely business. And even when I was beginning out there, there were shadows, traces of the glamour that had been in the 30s and the 40s, and here in the 80s, I am working, my main hobby is collecting the films in the 30s and the films of the 40s, and I make a very severe distinction between the old Hollywood and today's Hollywood. It has become an economic necessity. And I'm grateful that I shared in some of that old real glamour, because it did exist.
How long do you spend on the West Coast over the year?
Oh, gee, that...
Most of the time?
Well, no. Ideally, I spend the spring and the fall here in Manhattan, because those are the two prettiest, loveliest times of the year. Witness what we're having these days. And then I spend the winter and the summer out there. It doesn't always work out that way. I very often have to be in New York for much longer periods of time. But I really do have the best of both possible worlds,
yeah,
I think.
You really do. Culturally, do you find it, how do you find shifting from one to the other? I see living in Los Angeles a more benign existence.
Well, we do have some culture out there. You'd be surprised.
Well, I didn't say you didn't. I just thought about benign.
All right, well, benign. You know, there's a thing. New Yorkers have a thing about Hollywood. They think we're in a cultural oasis. I mean, of a cultural desert out there. I really consider where I live a little oasis. I go in through a pair of gates, and I just close those gates, and I have a garden and a pool, and I just stay in that little house, and I write. When I'm in New York, I'm much more active. I go out a good deal more than I do out there. I see many more people. I have more friends. The friends that I have in California really, in the main, are not involved in the industry. Although I still have some of the first friends I ever made in California, I still see.
Well, All That Glitters is a wonderful book, and I certainly enjoyed it. And I know that your readers are going to be caught up with guessing who is who in the book. And
well, those are very kind remarks. I thank you for them.
Well, and I'll certainly look forward to reading the romantic history that you're writing, 19th century romantic story.
Mm-hmm.
And, I can wait 2 years.
Okay, fine.
So I hope to talk to you when that comes out, assuming that we're still here.
I look forward to it.
Okay, Tom, thank you very much.
My pleasure, John. Thank you.